everybody. Welcome to episode number 17 of the podcast. Check it out. Human creativity adds the color to our world. It's our crowning glory as a species, but it's also deeply personal. Welcome to Bedroom Beethoven's, the podcast where we explore stories with music producers to chat about creativity being a need, a desire. This week's episode features Kay LaMaestro, a talented young man on the rise who taught me that true creativity is about existence and being and giving of yourself and being honest. True creativity. Where does this unique human ability come from? How can we harness it in our lives? Well, that's what I'm here to find out. You can study brain scans of computative data to figure out those reasons, but I'd rather do it through human experience via the art of storytelling, just like hip-hop itself.
This episode is brought to you by Postpartum, a German underground hip-hop label. Listen, if you've heard the show, you know I love vinyl and that I hate boring black vinyl. In this day and age, I feel like if you love vinyl and love the physical medium, holding it, reading it, smelling it, admiring it, well then why not be creative with the wax itself? I'm a customer myself. I love these guys. They do editions of 400 copies of each album they put out, 250 on marbled, 100 gram copies, 150 on black, 100 gram copies, if that's what you're into. Look, not everyone's like me. Some people like black. Some people aren't collectors. They scratch every itch. All copies come with a hand-numbered Obi strip and a download voucher. Their next drop will be Crooks Everyday Struggle, and it will be dropped on June 7th digitally and June 9th on vinyl. Swing by the show notes on our website for all the links and release info, and visit postpartum-records.com or postpartum.bandcamp.com.
Check it out, guys. If you like what I do, leave me a review wherever you listen to the podcast. I appreciate the support. I appreciate the input, the comments, the suggestions, the feedback. And I'm going to keep doing what I do. So strap in. Episode 17. I'm your host, Cello. And
it's the Bedroom Beethoven Podcast.
I thought I was being like a pioneer. I thought I was the first person to get you, and then it turns out like you, I'm not unique at all. You're very much in demand.
It's so good. I mean, we have times. It is what it is, but we're here.
You're based in London, right?
Yeah.
I think fate might have brought us together. Ryan, Raquel, and I grew up in the same city.
Oh. Six.
Yeah, we grew up in the Killeen Temple area in Texas. So there must be something, man. I know you want to move to Germany and all that, but I think there's something in Central Texas that's dropping some signs. Maybe the universe is trying to tell you something.
Low key.
You know what? I've never disclosed this on the podcast before, but I started this podcast at the top of the year because I was coming into it unemployed. My spirits were a little low, and I wanted to do this podcast to be kind of like that rose that grew from concrete. You know, I can reflect back at this dark time and see that, oh yeah, hey, I created something great. And it lets me cross paths with people like you. You know, you're a talented producer. It really is the cherry on top for me. But what I like about you, and it's infectious and it really raises up people like me, is that when I scroll through your timeline, or like I'm just checking you out, you know that you're destined for great things. You know 2019 is a pivotal year in your career. You just...
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, I appreciate... I mean, it's just like, for right now, I'm just like working my way up to what I have to be. But like, I mean, it was, for me, it's all in due time. Like, I'm not trying to like rush anything, but like, I mean, like, it's falling in place bit by bit. So it's cool. I'm just taking it as it goes along and, you know,
well, you don't need a rush if you know it's going to happen. Then you can take your time and perfect the process, and you you exude positivity. And then I think people like me, even if I'm not a music producer, I think I need daily doses of hope and optimism And I'm just glad that you agreed to join me so we could talk about, you know, life, music, love, anything. So
appreciate.
Yeah. And so, you know, I want to talk about, because I'm actually half German, and I see you proclaim your love for Germany. Why do you know? What, I've never been. My mom is 100% German. I've never been. Yeah. So what am I missing out on?
Germany, I mean, like, culturally, it's sick. I mean, there's lots to see. I mean, as far as Germany goes, I've been before, but I haven't been to Berlin or Frankfurt. So, like, when I went this year, it was just like, damn, this is crazy. Like, yo. Like, I was telling, like, because my uncle's always telling me, like, hey, when you go, everything is cheap. And, like, that's cool shit. So I'm like, okay, cool, you know, all right, I'll see for myself. So I booked the flight, we went, and I already had, like, homies, like, producer friends and you know, like, all that. So it was only when I went, then we met, and it was cool. Like, we were just in the studio, like, pretty much all day, just making music, doing all kinds of cool things. And, like, I mean, just the vibe and, like, the whole, like, feel overseas, for me, it's just like, okay, you know, I'm pretty much in love with Berlin. So I'm like, okay, cool, this is pretty good. I'm gonna come back and stay here eventually, but just for right now, I'm just here, just traveling to do my thing. Yep.
How's that cultural immersion shaped your musical perspective? Like, you've left Germany and you're back where you are now. Yeah. Are you inspired?
I mean, yeah, a lot. I mean, when I'm in Berlin, it's like every day I meet with my homeboy S Fidelity. He's a producer on Jakarta Records. Like, we always meet. And it's like, when we're there, it's just like a slew of ideas. Like, we always just cook. It'll be like countless beats made in one day. We take a break, come back. It's just like, on average, we make at least 6 or 7 whole songs in the day, and then call it a day, then repeat the next thing the next day. And it's just like, it's inspiring for me, because it's like, seeing new stuff gives me inspiration for the day, and like, it can easily trigger ideas for me. So like, it's cool.
Yeah, the crazy thing about the UK is, like, you guys have that strict approach to, like, gun control, so that helps diminish crime in the capital. So it's probably not a good idea for a rapper to talk about popping trunk and running up on you with guns. It's probably not a good look.
I mean, pretty much everywhere, it's the same thing in every scene. Like, there'll always be those rappers talking about popping guns and all of that. But I mean, it's pretty much what they're accustomed to. For me, it's different. You know, I haven't really been, like, I have friends that, you know, are into that stuff in actual life. But, like, for me, just my intuition and, like, you know what to stay away from and who to hang with, and finding your way through life and just all of that. So just knowing what is right from wrong. And I mean, just know what you know. Trust your intuition. What's bad is bad. What's good is good. And choose what you want to do with your life. And yeah, for me, it's just like, music keeps me grounded, keeps me out of trouble, you know. Just, yeah.
I like to think of myself as well versed in hip hop, but my familiarity with, like, your scene was just like Roots Manuva and a few others. But then I started noticing, like, Jamie XX for Drake's second album, Take Care. He like put him on, and then like Sampa from South London was on his third album, and then he had Hudson Mohawk doing production. And it's almost like Drake had this love affair with, like, UK artists and producers. So I started, started getting into it a little bit more.
Chords blend. I provoke applause when I play the local swordsman. Press record when I'm swinging these words. Immaculate. Evacuate the premises. Nemesis. Never swim with us. As ever,
each time we touch mics, we bust mics, we brought mics, we cuss mics. Confess like,
but I don't know. It's funny. It's like, nobody ever, like, claims London. Like, a New York rapper is going to claim BK, for instance. And if I was writing an article on you, like, a lazy tagline would be like, Kayla Maestro is one of the many voices of urban Britain, maybe. But I don't even know what that means now. But back then, they were trying to give validation to what was considered, like, primarily American creativity or an American musical nuance. And it was all part of this hype machine that's led to, like, the landscape that we have today. I guess it's all in a day's work. I don't know, as original as we are, as original as you are, I think we're just copying the original guys like Kool Herc and Izzy B and Grand. Yeah, all those earlier generation guys. But when I listened to your music, I could tell it was never supposed to copy what came out of Brooklyn or anywhere else. It was supposed to be like its own sound. So that's what really threw me to you.
I mean, yes, like I have my inspirations and just taking that and just what I have, like my own groove, incorporating the two and just like providing a new groove and setting my own mark in the scene. Like, yeah, it's pretty much it. I mean, it's like you have your inspirations and like you give props what props is due, but like don't copy directly what you hear, but like try to incorporate that into what you do and make it unique to yourself. And
I mean, even with like Roots, Manuva, he always felt like he was secondhand British. It was always part of his motto, like that his whole career was just this massive mistake. Like he would end up somewhere between record labels and management and friends, and they'd be like, hey, you know, this is really great. And he'd be like, is it? Yeah. And then 10 years later, he'd be like, yeah, you know, I guess you were right. Meanwhile, you're on Instagram bobbing to your own shit. Like, when is it my turn to eat? Let's go. Like, you have a confidence that I think the past generation didn't have in their music.
I mean, I think confidence is pretty much always, it's like, if you know you're good, own it. Like, you know, don't deny. Like, I used to be like, you know, playing the humble guard. Like, I mean, having humility is a good trait. You know, it's something I always value. But like, I think there's a difference between being humble and humbling yourself for, you know, like other people to like, I guess it's like, okay, you can't be confident. You can be confident, but not too confident in your music. And so it's like, oh, if he's too confident, like, oh, yo, he's cocky, yo, this and this and this. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with having confidence in yourself. You know, if you know you're good, I mean, own it. Like, you know, just express yourself, just be who you are, own your skills, because if you worked hard for something to get to a certain point, like where I am, you know, just own it and just, you know, just be free with yourself. Just don't force anything. Just like, you know, just acknowledge that you are who you are. This is what you do. You're here because of your skill. And yeah, you know, just embrace that. And then, yeah, it's pretty much
it. And I mean, it's the same goes for like this podcast. Let's say I'm only on like episode 15. I know I have what it takes to make a pretty good product, but people might not see it yet because I'm only on episode 15 and they might not check me out until episode 200. And the same is for you. Like, you know, you're good. You just, you have to try to convince the world one by one to see what you see in yourself. And I think that's the main hurdle. And my absolute favorite thing about you is you will things into existence. Like, yo, I'm working with so-and-so. It hasn't happened yet, but what's up? Yo, who's going to help me secure this A-Marie joint? You know, has stuff like that produced fruitful results for you? Like just kind of just putting it out into the universe and it coming back to you?
I mean, all the time, it's like you put it out, but then in the process, you work towards your goal. Like, okay, like say, you know, in the next year, I'm going to work with him and him and him. So what you do is you have your goal. You know, for me, it's just I have my platform. I'm still rising up to, you know, where I might be. Like, I might be, I don't know, I could be big in the next year. I ain't too sure yet. But, you know, it's a likely chance of that happening. But in the meantime, you know, it's just like, okay, I have a goal I want to work towards. So it's just like, okay, that's my focus for right now. How can I make this happen? So, you know, networking and, you know, just having all of this that brings attention to my platform, and then, you know, it'll be like getting switched on by what I'm doing. Like, yo, who's this dude? Yo, he's making this and this. Like, yo, you should hit him up. You know, eventually, because you never know who's, you know, paying attention to your music and whatever you do. So, like, it could be someone with essentially a link to who you're trying to get to, and then, you know, it all falls in place. But for the time being, just like work towards what you do, hone your craft, and then, you know, the rest will speak for itself.
Yeah, I did that too. And when I first started out, I was like, you know what? I want to get picked up by big publications. That'll boost my numbers. And then you showed love to the independent platforms, but you gave good advice. You're like, stop waiting for like Complex to tweet about you. And I've only been doing this for 2 months and they picked me up because I didn't focus on it. You know, so, you know, I didn't know if that was a measure of success or if I should be proud of that. But it's almost like, you know, stop worrying about what the next person thinks or waiting for this to happen. Like, it'll come. So that's a valuable lesson. But as I dig more into like your technique and all that, I always go back to like like Puff Daddy saying he invented the remix, and like, you know, don't quote me on that, but I'm gonna go with bullshit unless he means that he brought the remix to like top 40 radio.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But staying on topic, you know, you did the same thing that like Ninth Wonder did, where he just remixed whatever that he could get his hands on. He did this thing called the Ninth Invented the Remix, and he remixed an Amory joint. He remixed a Bilal joint. Yeah. And this was before he released God's Stepson. All of this stuff, these remixes can lead a producer to selling beats for $40, $50 is kind of how you started. Would you still recommend that old school grind in 2019, or just technology make it easier to just put things on SoundCloud?
I mean, just it's taking what Ninth did with the whole like remixing thing, and I mean, having technology and the whole platform that we have today is an advantage, but it's all about how you use it. Like, how do you use the internet to get to where you want to be? Like, for me, when I was starting out, I had the internet, and it was, you know, like a platform which I knew how to get around, but like it was pretty much about planning ahead and, you know, trial and error. Like, I used to like DM just people I was feeling in the moment. Back in like 2014, I used to like DM people like, hey man, my name is Kay, I'm XY years old, I'm from here, you know, if you have the time, you know, check me out. I have a few tracks I want to send to you. And then I'd send a preview of, you know, something I was working on, and then await a response. But like in the meantime, I had like Facebook groups I was posting in. Like, there was this one big producer group called Art of Sampling. So I was active in that group, and that's how I got my first few hundred followers, like posting myself in there and then just building a base. And then over the next few years, just progressing through that. But like the people I've worked with, like Eloquent, yeah, I DM'd him, I think 2016, and that's how we befriended each other. I was like, yo, you know, I'm K, you know, I'm 16, here's my beats, check me out. And then he was like, yo, you're 16, oh, this is fire. And then, you know, 2 years later, we're working on some stuff, and, you know, yeah, just stuff like that. But as I was saying, just knowing how to get around with the new technology, like nowadays, you know, compared to the old school, like it was limited on resources, so you couldn't really have like much to use. But like, it's all about what you have and how you're going to use that to get towards where you want to be. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
Like, that's how me and Eloquent connected too. So a lot of people were like, you know, how do you make connections? Like, how do you get these people on your show? And it's just like, yo, just ask. Put your best foot forward. Yeah. And it's funny, is like, you were like, oh, you know, I'm X years old, or like people are shocked that you're 16. Do you feel like that's the best way as a young cat to get the attention of the older artists?
Yeah, if you feel you're skilled, and you know, if you're so young, it can, you know, work out in your favor and then take your places, and you know, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, like, Amory's One Thing came out when I was 19, and I remember being a freshman in college when that came out, and I'm in my 30s now. And I wonder if an older artist is more comfortable working with producers they grew up with. Like, maybe she has trust in Rich Harrison or Lil Jon, or maybe... Even worse, she only works with a new and young producer in order to get a new sound and capture a new audience, which in my opinion is a slap in the face. But is that even something that you're even worth worrying about?
I mean, no, not really. I mean, for me, it's just like, if it's mutual, if I'm feeling you and they're feeling my stuff, then, you know, it will happen in its own time. But like, in the meantime, I'm not trying to like force connections between like me or the other artists. It's just like, keep it organic, and yeah, that's it.
Yeah, because I don't want to think toxic, but it's like, you know, if Ludacris had a track with Metro Boomin, I would be like, I think he's only doing that to try to get on back on the radio or trying to connect with a young audience instead of like doing what's true to him.
Yep.
So I don't know. I would always be kind of self-conscious about that effect, because it's like, you know, you flipped Common's Go, and you were like 6 years old when that came out, so it must be kind of weird going back to the well to appreciate these songs and use them to create something when at the time of inception, when they came out, you couldn't like fully appreciate it, you know. Go, 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 and on the count of three, go, 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 and on the count of three.
all of that's pretty much like what I grew up on, and like just like revisiting the stuff that I was hearing growing up. So it was just like, okay, you know, just like the old school, back in the day, throwback tracks. I always like had in mind, like, okay, now I can do this. How can I go back and revisit and make it new?
Yeah, and it's funny. It's like while I'm doing this podcast, I'm hearing people's stories, and there's like similar starts to people's career, and there's a difference between like finding your God-given talent early. Like, I always wonder, like, how do you find it? How do you know that you're like good at football and then you make it to the NFL? But what if you discover you're good at football at 25 and it's too late? Then what do you do? And like with music production, I'm finding out a lot of it, like, it comes from boredom. Like, I was talking with like these younger producers, and they told me that they were bored, and they're like, all right, this will kill an afternoon. You know, so I don't know, like, paint me a picture, like, where are you growing up? Like, I guess you're in middle school, you're like, you're bored, music enters, how?
Pretty much the same. Yeah, you know, I was bored, you know, I'm like, all right, cool. So my brother had a software called Mixcraft on my family computer, which is like a few years back, like 2010, but I never actually like fully utilized it till like 2012. And it was like, okay, you know, I'm bored. It's there. Let's open up. Let's see what we can do with this. And, you know, at first I was just making beats with like the loops in the program. So it was just like, okay, put two and two, it makes a good sound. Okay, let's see what we can do with this. And then it was only like 2 years after I was using loops, which I found the MIDI function on the laptop keyboard. And it was like, okay, now I can actually like type beats in and create stuff on my keyboard. And from that point, it was just like trial and error and just finding my sound and like learning how to program drums and all of this. And then, you know, as time progressed, I got better and better and better. And then now I'm like, you know, I'm on top. I'm here. I'm just, you know, going around playing my tracks that I've made on my laptop or like my computer and just like, you know, reaping what I've worked for. And yeah, it's great. It's great.
Like, what's the schooling system like there? Like, how do you view the structure in place? Like, were you like a good student? Like, did you agree with how things were set up?
Depends. I mean, it was cool for me. Like, I value education. Like, learning is definitely important. But like, as far as school goes, you know, I was really like switched on. Like, I was good at certain subjects, but like, for the most part, I didn't really care about like certain subjects. Like, I mean, French pretty much had like my sole attention, because that was the only thing that I pretty much liked in school. So it was just like maths was cool, English was cool, but you know, like truly, and it was like making beats in between school and stuff. It was just like, okay, making beats is pretty much my sole focus for like the majority of the time. So it was just like, okay, let me just finish the school stuff and just get to making beats.
Let me just get out of there. Yeah. I always hear about stuff like, you know, British society, like people say like there's an inequality problem, but a large can't believe there's a big problem with the education system. You know, it's similar to America, where we're constantly being beaten around the heads. Like, you'll be nothing. You're going to end up working at McDonald's. And then I always think, like, well, what's wrong with that? Like, why shouldn't I flip burgers if I want to?
No. I mean, yeah. I mean, yes, you know, I do feel here it's rare. I mean, like, in my school, pretty much, like, you get the support you need. But, like, at times, if you abuse the support, you know, if you abuse the support, it's pretty much on you. You know, like, if you don't take advantage of the help you're being given and stuff, it's pretty much your own future you're messing with. So, like, you know, I always appreciated the resources that was given to me. Like, you know, this is pretty much put in place to help you succeed and get to where you have to be and all that. So it was never anything I took advantage of, because it was like I valued it. But, like, then again, it was just, you know, I couldn't really see myself doing anything else than making beats.
So but you are in university though, correct?
I mean, not yet. I took a year off. So it was just like,
oh, that year's going to turn into two, three. I had this fantasy where you're in college and you're getting calls and texts like, hey man, we booked a show for you. And you're like, man, I'm in chemistry class right now. Like, I can't focus.
That was me back in, I used to be in sociology, like learning and stuff. And then every few moments, it would be a buzz and email like, yo, hey, man, like, hey, we're digging your music. Let's get you out to Korea. I'm like, yo, Korea? But I'm still in school. I have an extra year to finish before I can do all this. So it was like, oh, man. I mean, a part of me was like, yo, drop out, you know, do this thing full time. But it was like, you know, I pretty much like, I respect my parents, you know, so it was just like, okay, let me just finish the school and take a gap year and just do everything in my gap. So, I mean, that's pretty much why I am right now. I'm pretty much finished with that. And now I'm on my gap and doing everything which I plan to do. Pretty much, it's a good feeling. So, yeah.
Did you have like a compromise? Like, hey, look, mom and dad, I'm going to take a year off. I'm going to make it pop. And if not, I'll enroll.
Originally, my mom didn't agree with the gap. It was you go straight into uni. I was like, no. I was like, that's dead. You know, I ain't trying to like overwork myself. I just finished school. I ain't starting. I said, yo, that's dead. Let me just get this bread and do what I wanted to do. Like, it was always a plan. Like, as soon as the One Thing remix took off, and it was just like, okay, it's getting pretty serious. Cause like, I was just making like flips after flips after flips, and they were getting popular. I'm like, okay, let me just keep up the momentum and just take some time off and get this off the ground. But you know, it was always like, don't waste time, get straight into the books. And I was just like, nah, I can't be here. So let me just take a time. I need some time off, because I was just like, pfft. I mean, my dad was cool. He was poor. He was always supportive of the whole decision, you know. So, yeah.
It's not just a pipe dream, though. I mean, you have the evidence. Like, hey, look, mom and dad, I went from 46,000 plays to a million. That's you got to let me do this, you know. So,
yeah, and it was like at the same time, even like financially, because I was making like hella bread. So it was just like she saw like all the money coming in and all this. So she pretty much knew, yeah, this is serious, because I could pay bills off my music and all this. So it was like, okay, you know, just give me some time off and we can expand. I can expand the bread. If I get some time off and just do what I have to do, I have a lot planned. So like, yeah, it was pretty much that, you know.
And something like, you know, like all parents would worry about their son is something that you brought light to. You strongly advise anyone who gets into this music thing, get a manager who's 100% transparent with everything that you do. But a lot of people don't know that. If you know that at such an early age, did that come from experience where you had some forms of contracts or emails and you missed due to lack of communication? Or like you knew that going in, you didn't have to learn it the hard way?
No, I mean, it's common sense. You know, it's just like, you know, if you are in a position where, you know, you're pretty much taking off and like you having all these emails coming in, like, having someone to manage it is good, but at the same time, you know, with all like the contracts and stuff, make sure you know what's going on behind the scenes, because there's people that don't even know, you know, as far as contracts goes, like what they're getting into, and they have managers that do stuff in, you know, the shadows. So it's just like, okay, it's kind of sketch. So like, get someone who knows, you know, what they're doing, and that can bring you in on everything that goes on within the contracts or like the business side of everything. Like, yeah, like my manager's cool. Like, she's transparent. She's pretty much transparent with like everything that goes on. So like, I have a shared email where everyone comes in, you know, we go through everything together, like contracts or like show agreements and all of this. So, you know, she's clutch, you know, she can handle the business, and, you know, and I can see what's going on behind the scenes. So I have trust in her, and like, you know, I haven't had any doubts in her. So like, you know, just having someone like that that can push you forward and, you know, let you know what's going on is essential.
It's a PSA. I agree with you that it is common sense. But the thing is, people are inherently lazy. Inherently lazy. Like, if I have a bank account online, I bet you the majority of people's passwords is like password 123. They're not going to have like an overly complex password to guard them between a hacker and their bank account. I think some artists just hire. They put full trust in these services without getting involved. Like, one hand tells me, well, I'm paying someone to deal with this shit so I don't have to. And if they're legit, I won't need to look over their shoulders, you know? So I think everyone knows they're just lazy. You know what I mean?
Like, pretty much.
And if I'm going back to your musical things that inspire you, like, I noticed you like the soulful stuff, like Dreams by The Game, or I Really Mean It, the high-pitched samples. It's almost like a lost art form these days. I know Alchemist does it a bit, but I don't really hear people sampling, at least not by the new guys. So, I mean, are we going to see, like, some kind of influence, some kind of beats coming out that are kind of mirroring that?
I woke up out that coma 2001, about the same time Dre dropped 2001. 3 years later, the album is done. Aftermath presents Nigga With An Attitude, Volume 1. Rap critics politicking, want to know the outcome. Ready to die reasonable, doubting doggy style in one. I feel like Pac after the Snoop Dogg trial was done. Dre behind that G-Series and All Eyes On Me.
Hella styles in my beats. I have, like, for me, I have quite a lot of range. I have I do like soulful beats, and then I do like some like underground stuff, and then I have my own, like, I don't know, it's just like I have too many influences, so it's just like I take a bit of everything and then mix it.
Aaliyah had her, Left Eye had her, so I reached out to Kanye.
And I brought you all my dreams, cause I love you.
Song is dedicated to Yetunde Price, the sister of Venus and Serena Williams, who was slain during a gang shootout in Compton Sunday, September 14th, 2003. Rest in peace.
With each other, like, I have the old school, the new school, like, then have some, like, dance stuff, some hip hop, like, all kinds. But yeah.
Well, how's your production expanded in the last 3 years, and why, like, the 1,000-day wait to drop something official?
In the last 3 years, I feel like I've broken out of my bubble, because I used to just be, like, hip-hop bass, and that was it. But then listening to, like, other tracks and, like, having influences from other people, and then, like, being brave enough to, like, cross over into different genres and making stuff in, like, different styles and all of this. For me, it helped me improve my style and my production range, because it was like, once you get accustomed to, like, new stuff, then you can incorporate that into your regular stuff, and, you know, it can expand your range, and you can try out new grooves and new, like, you know, like, melodies and all kinds of stuff like that. So for me, I would strongly advise getting uncomfortable and exploring new stuff that you're not accustomed to, because then in the long run, it will improve your knowledge as far as beats goes, and, like, how you can incorporate different stuff and make it sound unique to yourself. And
but there's a part of you that, like, wants to go back to making beat music like you did in 2016, even though you got two EPs and an LP coming out this year, you know?
I mean, yeah. All day. It's like I have an LP with House Shoes, which is pretty much like the whole, like, 2016 beat vibe, like, just hardcore, like, straightforward beats. So, I mean, I pretty much got back to that. But, you know, it's like, at the same time, it's just staying true to yourself and not being afraid to go explore new stuff. And then again, and at the same time, know your roots and then go back, revisit your roots and, you know.
When you're making a beat, do you ever keep live performances in mind? Like, for example, I think a big part of why Kanye's live shows sound so good, as demonstrated by Sunday School at Coachella, is, like, because Kanye is such a great producer who has, like, a sensibility of how to produce the music at a show and how it should sound. Because a lot of times during a rap show, the band doesn't sound right, and hip hop is not played by a band. Like, the Roots are one of the few people who can pull it off and still make it feel like rap, but it's like a very specific feel, and it's very careful in design and how the instruments are used. What's your take on that?
Me, for as far as live shows goes, I mean, just like,
you got your first headline show, man. I'm excited.
Yeah. So me too. Like, yeah, it's like, damn, headline in London is cool. Like, I'm pretty much like, this is where I am. London's where I live. You know, it's great. But as far as live like performances goes, I mean. Having, because I usually make two versions of tracks. I have the SoundCloud version, then stuff for, like, the live sets. So I have, like, extended parts, or, like, I alter some parts to ride through. So I have more like, I'd say like space to like mess around and blend stuff. And
that's dope, man. You got all your covers basically. Like, you know, today the sound of 808s is everywhere. It's kind of like milk or water, and you can't make a record without having that 808 sound. It's just not hip hop. You know, like whenever record producers feel it's not complete, unless they say like, yo, we got to put 808s on this shit, and bang, now the record's finished. And I don't care if it's a ballad, it's not complete. Put the 808s on it. Okay, it's hot now. I think people get lazy with it, and like once something becomes essential, it becomes lazy. That's kind of how I feel.
Yep.
Every top 40 track has the same drum kit.
I mean, yeah. I mean, yeah, I feel that as well. I mean, it's like either two main drum kits. You have the dance drum kit, like the EDM drums, and then the trap kit, and that's it. Like no one has that soul no more. It's pretty much gone as far as mainstream goes. But like, if you look hard, you can find like the true soul stuff, and you know, fall in love with that. And
I'm glad I was able to get on the ground floor with you, and I'm going to be on the sideline watching your meteoric rise to that mainstream that we're talking about, man. I couldn't be happier for your success.
Appreciate it. Thank you. I mean, as far as mainstream goes, I don't really wish to be mainstream. It's just like having a solid base is definitely one thing I would work towards, having a good base, a good following. But like, as far as mainstream goes, like having a platform I can put on other people on as well, like having like that platform I can just, you know, like, oh, this is what I'm listening to currently, yo, check it out, and, you know, getting people in on what I'm doing. But at the same time, it's like I don't want to conform to, you know, like as you rise, you know, people like lose themselves, like they start doing stuff on the mainstream approach and not like what's true to them. So it's like, for me, even though as I rise, you know, just keep true to myself, just whatever I feel I want to do, I'll do. I'm not listening to like the industry or like these corporations that want certain things from me, like, yo, you know, what's hot, you should make this type of track or this. Like, nah, just follow your intuition, what you feel is best for yourself, just do. And, you know, the rest will be natural, will come to you. But, like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, man. And, you know, the vinyl is coming out. You know, Syn, S-Y-N, is the album. The instrumentals on SoundCloud. First headline show next week.
Yep.
If there's anything I'm missing, man, that you want to tell the people where they can find you, you got the floor.
You find me everywhere is pretty much Kayla Maestro, if you don't know. Or all my handles are at La Maestro Mind. So you can just find me everywhere on those two. But
yeah, tweet at him now, because in 2 years he's gonna be too busy to respond. I guarantee it.
Nah, I mean, for me it's like when I don't ever like not respond to people, even, you know, so I'm at a certain place in this whole music thing. It's just like, it's common courtesy. I mean, if you have time, you know, I mean, you don't owe anyone anything, not even your time, but like, you know, for me, like I can understand someone big that I look up to hitting me up or me hitting them up and wanting a response, even though it's not always guaranteed, but like, it would be nice to like give back even a part of your time and just your audience and your base. So like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, man. And that's why I'm very super appreciative of your time, because you're right. Nobody owes you anything. So I appreciate you being here. You're a scholar and a gentleman. Thank you, sir.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on your podcast. You know, it's been a pleasure. You know, I appreciate it.